Hey yo.
Hey yo.
Welcome everybody to We Talk Wrestling Radio with Addy and Mo. I'm Addy.
I'm Mo.
And we're going to talk some wrestling.
Excellent.
Let's jump right into it. Mo, WrestleMania is upon us. You wanted to have some discussion around the road to WrestleMania. What do you want to look at?
Well, I think obviously the most important thing going into WrestleMania is The Rock. That's pretty obvious. The question is, seen as a wrap, what's the fallout from it? Was it appropriate? What are your opinions on it?
Cena rap. See, the Cena rap, I'll start off first by saying I loved it. I thought he went out, and PG or not, it was the best Cena promo that I've heard in quite a while. He had to respond to The Rock. He did respond to The Rock. Question now for me is the fallout of this rap. Is Rocky on Raw on Monday to respond to the rap?
I don't know if he needs to be on Monday. In fact, I don't know how many more appearances he wants to have. If anything, I think it maybe one more appearance on Raw. I mean, I believe he needs to have one appearance on SmackDown. But as far as the rap is concerned, and you know I'm not a John Cena fan. I represent the people. Yes, I'm of that age where I'm not, my balls have not, you know, They've expanded. I have a deep voice.
Your balls have expanded. Excellent.
I was going to say my balls have dropped, but then I realized that only happens when I'm seeing your mom. So anyways, Cena, the problem with the rap I have is, and we're not going to be doing a PG show by any means here. But
no.
I think when you're – no. But I think the problem is when you're the guy that they do the stand-up for the WWE and you're the first person they put on the camera and he says the most important thing about us is we're a PG product. He is the head of your company as far as the face of your company to the public. He is the child's hero. I don't believe in the PG product. I don't believe that makes any sense. I think you should be able to do whatever storyline you need to do. I don't think to be able to sit there and say we're PGTVM or anything like that in order to be able to do a sleazy product makes any sense either. I don't think you should have the TNA approach. Hey, we can get away with swearing. We can get away with blood. We can get away with sex. We're going to do it because we can get away with it. That's stupid. You should do it if it's appropriate to the angle. You should do it if it's appropriate to the storyline. If it's Bryan Danielson choking somebody with a tie and it's going to draw money, you should be able to do it. The problem is you're John Cena. You're the guy who says we're PG. We stand up for the WB and that's the most important thing about us. You cannot be the guy who goes out there and cuts that non-PG rap. If John Morrison wants to go out there and cut a non-PG rap, I got no problem with it. John Cena, I don't like it. I think the guy's a vomit. And I don't think if he has to be able to change everything that makes his character successful right now in order to connect to the fans and respond to The Rock, then his character right now is a failure.
A wrestler is a hypocrite is what you're saying.
It may happen.
Interesting.
It may happen.
I had no problem. Again, I'm just someone that needed to be entertained. And John Cena, quite frankly, entertained me. I could do without, as I normally do, without the Brokeback Mountain reference and whatnot, you know, sitting back going hee-hee. But
he's PG, he's doing that, though.
Well, but I did prefer that, a Brokeback Mountain reference, to saying poo-poo, or this is poopy, or spray painting with Crime Time poopy on the side of a limo. I mean, to me, that's just going too far in one extreme, and I don't think that the rap went too far in the other extreme. I did like the fact that he did his rap, he finished his rap, he put the microphone down, and he just walked out of the ring. He didn't try to follow it with anything. The segment ended. We didn't get, we didn't get his music. He just left, and we went to commercial.
That's fine. He can do the rap. He can just leave. He can respond. He could have done it in a non-PG way and not be clever. He could have done it in a way that didn't represent what he is and what he holds up as value and not be clever and respond to The Rock. Instead, he had to go someplace that, as his character, he has really been against. Now, I hate the PG character. I hated the rap character that he did, too, admittedly. I'm not a fan, but I do think that it's not about the fact that it's PG. It's about the fact that they have said, he's the guy out there saying, we're PG. That's the very first thing in the stand-up for WWE that he said, and he's out there cutting this.
See, the thing,
I think the guy's just, I don't know.
The thing is you've already, unfortunately to me, said PG more times than I care to say in an entire show. And it and admittedly, they bring it up, and I think that's to their detriment. But if you just go out and you do something that's PG, or you do something that's PG-14, or you do something that's NC-17, to me, it doesn't really matter as long as you just go out and do it, and you don't talk about, I'm doing this because. Even the Attitude Era, when it first came on the scenes, they started talking about how they were doing things that weren't PG, and I always had a problem with them not doing those things, but talking about them doing these things, just as now they're talking about how they're doing things the other way. And I can understand with a Senate run and a possible other Senate run coming up here, that they're going to be wanting to point these things out because the Attitude Era is still fresh in everybody's minds in terms of the public and especially in Washington, that they're, you know, that was to them the WWE, WWF, the Rock and Stone Cold and Sable and all that. So I can see them wanting to really push the differentiation from that, but I have no problem with Cena being the ones that comes out and does this rap after he's been talking about how we're PG. I mean, this is someone that, you know, I only took steroids once, brother Arsenio. I mean, it's happened before, it'll happen again, and I don't really have a problem with it because I don't expect anything less.
I think when you're sitting there and you have responded to somebody who is from the Attitude Era, and you had to respond by going closer to the Attitude Era, it really highlights everything that's a weakness in your character.
Well, sure.
It highlights everything that's a weakness in your current writing. And like I say, I don't think the sitting there and to say we're PG and to be often even safer than PG as they are has anything to do with anything. You should be able to do whatever storyline will draw money.
Yes.
And you shouldn't do something just because you can get away with it.
Well, the problem...
But the problem is, like I say, he is the... He... for it, when it's him... That's my problem, because he's
poopy.
I think we belabored this point. I think we obviously disagree on this point. You know what? Why don't you hit your
next
subject? It's
okay. It's okay for you to be wrong on this. It's fine.
No, no. Well, you know, I'll probably be wrong on everything tonight, but that's okay. I still have my point of view, and it's still right.
Well, let's switch topics, speaking of wrong, to TNA, and let's talk about 3-3-11. Dixie's
disgusting.
Response
pathetic.
To 3-3-11. You know, when I first heard it, I actually had a different opinion than most people. I thought, well, I wanted to see it. I've sort of heard that that's what they were doing, and wanted to find out. Okay, well, let's see this. And I understand in theory, and I can see Vince Russo sitting in a room and thinking that he's going to be cute and let's do this because the internet, because, you know, quite frankly, that's all that they care about. Well, the internet thought it was Sting. The internet thought it was Sting. So let's have Sting come on and do a similar thing, and then the internet will know it's Sting. And really, it just shows a lack of creativity to me. It shows that they have no idea what they're going to do. And then, spoiler alert, you know, Sting comes out and wins your world title. You know, a 52 or 53 or however old Real Estate Steve is pathetic. That, you know, Jerry Lawler didn't win the world title from The Miz. You know, and as much as the sentiment for that is,
Ric Flair didn't win the world title in his last run with the WWE.
He didn't, no. And I mean, and really, I mean, we watched, granted, we watched a 51-year-old Nick Bockwinkel be the AWA champion, but, you know, that was a different time, a different era, and quite frankly,
Sting was not Nick Bockwinkel.
Oh, God,
Nick
no.
Bockwinkel was not Sting. Let's be honest. I mean, there's things that Sting could do that Nick Bockwinkel couldn't do.
Yes.
But in the ring, Sting is not Big Bockwinkel. He's never had the dedication. The guy fell into something that he was had a good look for, he could make money in. He's never come across to me as a guy who loves the industry, loves the business. But that's a whole other issue. I mean, as far as the 3-11, as far as Vince Russo and whoever it was that came up with this, somebody's got to let these people know that when they make fun of... I mean, it's almost like if Raw had something and SmackDown did a parody of it, I wouldn't mind it so much, because they're actually both part of the WWE. Believe it or not, TNA actually is not part of the WWE. I mean, I know they don't know it, but we know it. The fans know it.
Well, I thought
They're
it was Raw,
clever.
SmackDown, and Retro were the three brands.
Well, absolutely disgusting. Honest to God, I thought it was just pathetic. I made an analogy that if somebody does something clever on the Grammys and somebody else comes out there and the American Music Awards does the exact same thing to parody it, that second person will look pathetic. It's the same basic idea. At some point in time, you have to think, we're not going to try and make our money off of running off their momentum. We're going to make our money by creating our own momentum. And they don't get that. They'll never get that as long as they're putting this 52-year-old in charge.
Well, precisely.
They'll never get that. The company and Dixie, here's the thing. People just they shit all over her on the
they
Twitter.
Did. That was awesome.
No, it's fantastic. She deserves it. My question is, will she get something out of that? How will she respond to that? Will she see the problem, or will she just get defensive like she always does?
Well, yeah, no, she'll get defensive, and she'll, you know, probably just hire a reality star, and everything will be fine. And no, she, I mean,
well, they already hired a reality star. They put this, what's her name, Angelina? This Angelina from the Jersey Shore, and they're going to have her wrestle.
Yeah.
They're going to have her because the Jenna Marasco thing and her match turned out so well that you want to do somebody else with absolutely no training or charisma or athletic ability to be able to train them to in the ring again. Fantastic.
Well, I don't know that anybody from the Jersey Shore doesn't have athletic ability. It's just done in a different way. But I'm not sure
this
that
is if there's someone that doesn't, it would be this Cal.
I will at least give TNA credit in with the fact that they have gone Jersey Shore route, which, you know, is a topical, popular show. I mean, when Jenna Marasca was on, nobody knew who the fuck Jenna Marasca was. She won Survivor, I think, 3 or 4 years before they even did it. And same with Johnny Fairplay when they did one of their 75.
There was no buzz around her. There was no buzz around either character at the time.
No, precisely. And there, at least there was at one point around Johnny Fairplay, but there wasn't against this Jenna Marasca. I mean, really, the only reason I even know her name is because of that shitty match with Charmel. But I will give you that I never heard of this, whatever her name is, Angela or Angelina or whoever it is.
She's
from the
least
Shore.
Popular, least known person on the show. I mean, at least Jay Wow at least has the breasts. This woman, I don't know what the hell she has.
Well, there's Jay Wow and Snooki, and quite frankly, that's the only two.
The situation. That's the people.
But I don't know anybody else. And so they did manage to find a lower tier, but at least it's from a popular show. So I will give them some credit for that. I don't know what they're going to do with it.
Well, you give them credit for that if it's well done. If it in some way is drawing money, if it's the main, if it's put eyeballs to the TV, it's made buys on their pay-per-views. When it hasn't, because it's poorly done and it looks like you're a cheap runoff and looks like you have no originality, it's actually a detriment.
Timothy Well and Stephen Dunn.
Yes. Well done. It has not been Timothy or. They both alive, or?
No, Steve Dahl has passed away.
Has he?
Yeah. I'm not sure about Rex King.
No, it's hard to believe because he's a wrestler and he's not with us anymore.
Mm-hmm. But, okay, right. So now we're moving on.
It's my turn. I got the next subject here. I'm going to ask you a very simple question. Since we're talking TNA and we had gotten to Mania, we're going to stay on TNA for just 1 second.
Jesus.
Samoa Joe, is there any opportunity that his character can still be rehabilitated, or is it done? Is it too far gone if they fucked it too badly?
You know, and you say that, I'm not even sure what his character is, quite frankly, anymore. He was the Samoan submission machine. You know, before that, he was the undefeated Samoan submission machine, and we knew he couldn't stay undefeated forever, and the Samoan submission machine. Really, I think the unfortunate part was Samoa Joe.
Before you go too far, I just want to jump in here. Just hold on to that for a second.
Well, you haven't talked in 2 minutes.
Well, you know, pardon the interruption, if you'll excuse me, but you say he couldn't stay undefeated forever. The Undertaker could not stay undefeated forever either, but his aura of invincibility never left.
No, absolutely, and unfortunately, the same could not be said with Goldberg. But no, and again, being the Samoan submission machine, I mean, he was the undefeated Samoan submission machine, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, until he met up with Kurt Angle. And then even then, the bloom wasn't off the rose after he'd lost to Kurt Angle.
It was quite a long time afterwards. They had that lockdown with the good build, and people actually were interested in seeing it. At that point, he had lost quite a few times.
And that's the thing. And even once, I believe, to Tomko at that point. But I think that the unfortunate part with Samoa Joe is that Samoa Joe got kidnapped and hauled in the back of a van, and We didn't see him for a couple weeks, and I think Taz made a couple things. With Samoa Joe, he's almost he's TNA's answer to every other WWE mid-card act in the year 2000s, or in the decade of the 2000s, is start-stop. Is Samoa Joe has been, you know, the undefeated Samoan submission machine, as I said. He's been someone that's been in that lockdown match with Kurt Angle that worked very well, and that angle worked very well. But then he's also been kidnapped and taken away. He's been part of whatever his Joe's army with a knife, and he's going after Scott Steiner with this big, you know, Alibaba swashbuckling knife, and then all of a sudden that's dropped, and he has this tattoo, and he's got the different Samoan tights, and all of a sudden he's gone again, and he's come back just as good old regular Samoa Joe, and now he's just another guy. That's really his gimmick. He's fighting with the Pope, and right now, and he was with, I believe he was with Jeff Jarrett's side, Jarrett and Sting, maybe? Was that a side? I don't even remember. It's friggin' Crash TV, and it's who knows. But I thought that Samoa Joe was on the side. I thought it was Sting, Pope, and Nash against Jarrett, Joe, and maybe somebody else anyway. And then that's when that immortal turned, and it looked like Joe was on the outside again. And now he's fighting with the Pope, and Pope apparently now is a heel, and Joe is the face still. And who knows what the hell they're doing there? And that's why Joe is just another guy. And the time really to strike when the iron was hot was around that Kurt Angle time, and they managed to revive it to the.
Didn't he hold the world title somewhere around that time, though? I mean, he did have a run at as a world champion.
Did he? Was he one of the guys that held all the belts with Kurt Angle? Because he, or was he?
That he had I don't recall. And it's it is difficult to remember all their title changes. But I can tell you this: when you say he's just another guy, you look on their roster page on their website. I'm pretty sure underneath all of the people, the pitchers, instead of having the name of them, it's going to say just another guy. And that's a TNA, point, that everybody becomes just another guy. But what gets me is I thought when Hogan and Bischoff were coming in, I thought there would be hope for Joe. At that point, he had already been completely screwed up as a character. But these are the same people that managed to turn Goldberg into a killer. And the thing about Joe is he is a killer. That's how the character should be.
Joe's
not a lot of promos,
yeah.
Not a lot of anything else. He can do things that Goldberg could never do in the ring. And Goldberg
work?
Had Goldberg. Yeah, well, he can work much better than Goldberg. Goldberg had things that Joe didn't have, but Joe nevertheless had an opportunity when they came back in, I thought, to be turned into that killer character again. And instead, to me, I don't know if it's they don't want to go back to something already done.
They don't know that that even existed. It's Hogan and Bischoff. They've got no idea
what's
happened.
They didn't know his history, that's for sure.
They don't. And the only real problem, the only saving grace that they may have had when Eric and Hogan came in was that they were bringing in guys that Joe had never been against. I mean, a Joe versus RVD type feud would have been great. You know, Joe versus Jeff Hardy. Great. You know, even Joe...
But the problem is, those are all things they're talking about are building towards a match, and people don't want to see that.
Well, no. No, if I could be honest with you.
Well, we'll be talking. Luckily, we have an interview with Vince Russo coming on later, folks. So,
excellent.
We're not going to... We're not going to hit that right now.
That should be enlightening.
Yes.
All right.
Yes,
well, let's get off the subject of TNA, because I'm starting to get a bit depressed. And quite frankly, it's a show that I watch sparingly.
Well, we've just spent more time talking about it in 10 minutes than I think most people spend watching it in a year.
Actually, I think if the time we were done talking about it, there probably would have been six different angles on Impact when we were doing it. So let's get on to the next topic here. We've talked a bit about the WrestleMania build. We've talked some TNA.
Do you mind if I jump in? I have some more on Mania. We never got to because we got in. Yeah, I know. I'm going to jump in. Where we go? I'm going to ask you this. What match should and what match will go on last at WrestleMania this year?
Well, I know there's a couple of options out there, and let's just kind of run down, before we get into that question, let's run down sort of the Mania card so far as we know it. We haven't had an announcement really officially of Taker and Hunter, but I guess we can assume that's happening.
No Punk Orton announced.
Punk
either.
Orton, but let's just say that's happening. Punk and Orton.
Yeah.
Let's go to. It looks like we're going to do something with Cody Rhodes and Rey Mysterio
again. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we can look forward to that. We've got, we do have the two title matches that are in stone now with Cena and The Miz and Edge and Alberto Del Rio. So, and we figure there'll be something along the lines with Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, mm-hmm. whether that's involving Alex Riley, whether that's Michael Cole and Lawler, who knows, but to me, now that we've sort of summed up what we've got, we don't know if there's going to be a Money in the Bank or some sort of multi-man match. I assume the Big Show's got to get on there as well. But
yeah, I mean, I don't think we're going to see a Money in the Bank this year. But,
no.
Obviously, they can just do the Battle Royal, and the winner of the Battle Royal gets a shot against, you know, the U.S. champion. Or
with the ECW champion.
Yeah, the ECW. Again, that worked well.
That was, what's his name is still there? Zeke. Zeke is on the roster still, so
yes.
We can do that. No, I think
Something I'm going to ask you about. Here's something. Is obviously, you see Punk Orton, and they're going that direction. You see Zeke and Show, because, you know, that's money. But
I think that is money.
Is the Core versus the new Nexus completely off the books? Do you think it's going to happen post Mania? What's going on with that?
I don't know that they know. And I think what we're looking at now is possibly a cross branded type match. If it's say the Core, Slater, all of the Core against, let's say, Santino, Kozlov, Big Show, and throw another wrestler in there, whether it's, talk about Nash, maybe.
Barrett looks like he has nothing going into the actual show.
Well, Barrett, and
which is a bit sad.
You've got some guys that are off the show right now, like Barrett and Sheamus,
you can see something with Daniel Bryan, though.
Possibly, yeah. But what I'd like to see is if they're going to get rid of Money in the Bank, that's fine, but let's have a multiple man, say, Intercontinental title ladder match.
When we talk about the Mania matches, and you're talking about the card, and I'm thinking, the card sounds pretty good. I think, Triple H and Taker has some drawing value, especially if Shawn's the referee. I don't think Cena and Miz is in any way drawing to anybody, because we have seen them together before, because Miz was treated so poorly in that previous feud, even though he has come a long way.
$1 million man, Miz? Come on.
The simple fact that The Rock is playing into that is...
This
is some draw there,
Answer your question,
Orton,
then.
Orton and Punk... Well, wait one second. Orton and Punk, that has some something. Here's the thing that I'm not seeing is any match where I'm going, that's a blow-away 4.5, 4.5, 5-star possible match. I don't look at Edge and Del Rio and think that's going to be a blow-away match. That match exists. And if they take away Money in the Bank, they potentially take away any opportunity for that. And that's something that Mania needs. And as much as I like Daniel Bryan, I'm not sure that he will get the opportunity to have that kind of match against Sheamus.
Well, I don't know. I was very impressed with the 3-minute squash that Bryan Danielson had with Batista last, before the Nexus.
I think he took on
Sheamus
3 or 4 weeks in a row at one point.
Yeah, but the matches themselves at least were relatively solid. You're right. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking to in terms of the match of the night. I think we're looking at Hunter Taker. I think that that's going to be the match in terms of when the one that's got the most. I don't think we're going to see a 5-star, but I think that's the one that has the closest potential to be in that 4-star range.
I don't really know with the injuries that both men have recently had that's possible.
Yeah,
I think
the
crowd will be so into it that it may seem like a better match, much like the Hogan Rock match.
Yeah, but these guys are grizzled veterans. I think the crowd's going to help that match. I think that's the match.
It'll be great drama, but I don't know that it'll be a blowaway match.
I think that
there's different things.
That's the match I think that Atlanta is going to be most into in terms of the crowd reactions is Hunter and Taker, and I think that's going to give it a little bit better boost. I think it's going to.
So you think it should go on last then?
No, I'm to answer your question. I think that Miz and Cena will go on last. I think it should go on last, and that's for no other reason than The Rock. It has nothing to do with either men. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that it's not going to have to do with either men. It's going to have to do with the fact that it looks, all signs are pointing to Alberto Del Rio winning the SmackDown title from Edge. I think that's a right move anyway, but WrestleMania, we go out on a high, and yes, I mean, you could go out on a high with Taker, but I think you still, you go out on a high with who they perceive to be their biggest star, and quite frankly, is their biggest star at the time, at this point, is John Cena winning the title. You've got that Rock Cena mix, which I'm still of the opinion that if Rock is going to do a match, then it's going to be from, at SummerSlam from Los Angeles. Because that's just, it's in Hollywood's backyard, and it's
that's
Rock,
logical,
and,
yeah.
And to me that just makes the most sense if they're going to do it, and it's going to give that build at the end of the show for them to do whatever they're going to do, seen as the champion. You've got the whole summer because Rock's going to have to do that Fast and Furious build. He's going to probably have another movie that he's going to have to start filming because that's just the way that
he's already got, he has two movies lined up already.
Yeah, so he's going to, I mean, but you can only do one at a time, so he's going to do the next one. And then, quite frankly, I think that's him and Cena doing that blow off at the SummerSlam there, and I think that's where you go. But for that reason, I think that's why you do that match last.
I would absolutely agree that match should go on last. I think it will go on last, and I think it should go on last because at the end of the day, the person that is drawing the most money at WrestleMania is The Rock. So therefore, the person that they should put on at the end of the show is The Rock. That said, if The Rock sits there and Cena does his five-knuckle shuffle and then The Rock does his people's elbow...
Talk about PG.
I'll be okay with it. No, I won't have... Yeah, PG, five-knuckle shuffle. Yeah, how did I help? Yeah, change the name of that anyways. But the point is that...
To the knuckle adjustment.
Yeah, the... The point is that that won't be a problem. I don't think I would mind that. If, on the other hand, The Rock does the five-knuckle shuffle, and the Cena does the people's elbow, and is so damn clever, I'll puke. I absolutely lose my lunch. That will disgust me. And that's where I'm kind of worried that they're going to go. The effort to give Cena the rub, to me, would turn me off if it's too strong. But I do think that it is the match that should go on last, though I really do believe there's a strong chance that the match with the most crowd reaction, the crowd will be most into, is the King... And Cole,
yes,
because Cole was, even before he started playing his heel character, when he used to come out and they would announce him at Raw's before shows, he was getting a huge, heel reaction.
Well, he replaced JR, really, right?
He is the single most dislikable character. And the problem with that is, of course, once you come off Mania, what the hell do you do with him?
Yeah, well, and that's fine. We'll just go into my next point here is Michael Cole. And quite frankly, what do you do with Michael Cole? I think, to me, it makes no sense, and I don't see how they could. Not that they won't, because, quite frankly, just because it makes no sense doesn't mean that that Mr. Giewertz ain't going to do that anyway. But I'm looking at the fact that Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler, they're going to have their blow-off, but they can't coexist. You can't go back to Cole and Lawler just, happily calling Raw or maybe with some tension that's gone by May or something. To me, that makes no sense. And so what you have to do, I've been extremely happy, and I figured I would be with Josh Matthews. I think let's let Josh run with Raw, and I mean, quite frankly, nobody's going to be JR, just like nobody was Gordon Solie. But in how many years between Gordon Solie and Jim Ross being JR and being at that height, did we have announcing with Kevin Kelly? No offense, Todd Pettengill and all those, Gorilla Monsoons and Vince McMahon's, when they worked, Macho Man Randy Savage being a commentary,
Art Donovan.
Art Donovan. How tall is that guy? How much does that guy weigh? No, I mean, you've got all these guys that, there was such a lull between those two peaks that
to say
I think
nothing of all the people, Mark Madden, and all the people that were on
Mark
WCW.
Madden.
But the problem with Cole is, you're right, you can't really just... Can you have him off TV for 6 months and have him come back and say, I'm sorry, or three months or whatever?
And
can you turn him into a manager? They won't, even if they should. Can you have him have a continuing feud against Lawler? Frankly, Lawler will have the law of diminishing returns applies to Lawler. So I think they've backed themselves into a corner, and they've done it because this is what the crowd wanted, and they've done it because, naturally, I think that they were surprised at how over Lawler got in his opportunity. I think they knew that people disliked Cole, but they've completely backed themselves into a corner going forward here.
The general manager really is what started. I mean, Cole was not liked, but the general manager was really the catalyst for
manager. That could be the role.
That's true. I mean, I think that would be a letdown. You're right. I mean, not that they necessarily will do it, but to me, the thing to do is Cole is a manager, and what I think you need to have happen is Cole needs to, go after, maybe not Jerry Lawler, but I mean, Jerry Lawler can fine be one of them, but I mean, you look at a stable of talent that Michael Cole could bring in, and I'm just throwing this out there, and I'm not a big fantasy book guy, but to me what you do is he's a heel manager, and I mean, you look at the people that he's on commentary already buried. You're looking at Daniel Bryan, that he's got an easy, he can bring in a guy very easily to feud with Daniel Bryan. He can bring in a guy very easily to feud with R-Truth. He can bring in Awesome Kong very easily to feud with Natty, because they've done all of these sort of setups. And I'm not saying that they're going to. If this was 10 years ago, I would say this is where they're going, because they have a plan.
You're giving them too much credit right now.
Right now, yes, absolutely. Because they would, I mean, 10 years ago, as I said, they would have this already planned. Maybe not 10 years ago, 15 years ago. They would have this, there would be a reason that this was all happening. There was a reason that during Tyson and Austin, Vince was going, "You ruined it! You ruined it!" to Austin, because they already knew that Austin McMahon was happening post-Mania. They don't know that stuff now. They fly by the seat of their pants, quite frankly, it shows, but I think that's what you do, is you set Michael Cole up as that heel announcer. You're right, I bet you what probably will happen is that he's going to be put in as the general manager, because they've painted themselves in the corner, they've got no other way out of it, and that's just the way that it's going to be.
Well, let's talk about this then. We're talking about Mania, we're talking about Cole, we're talking about Lawler. Let's talk about the idea that a lot of people have been talking about Alex Riley facing Lawler first, and then him getting five minutes with Cole. And the problem with that is, if at the time...
Well, that's wrestling.
Not even that. When Donald Trump had his guy, he brought out Bobby Lashley. If Vince McMahon had brought out somebody like, say, who was a heel at the time, the people didn't buy, like Santino Marella, that wasn't any buys. Alex Riley, frankly, isn't any buys. They need somebody that could be a killer. The person who should have been in that role, the person they should have, and unfortunately, especially with this last Monday against Mark Henry, they screwed up with Sheamus. Sheamus should have been the killer that represented him, because people would have bought, oh, Jesus, Sheamus, he's already... Remember, when he first debuted, he kicked Lawler in the face. Lawler at the time said, well, I want to do something about it, but you know what, I'm kind of retired, and I'll leave this to younger people. They could have tied that all in from long ago.
And he's King Sheamus.
Yeah, and he's King Sheamus as well. They could have tied all that in. They had an angle right there, but they're not smart enough to see it. So I don't really think just Cole versus Lawler is quite enough, and I don't think Riley at all works. And I don't know who on their roster is a killer that they can bring in.
You know what?
They can't put Ezekiel Jackson there. He has another issue. I can't think of anybody who's a killer on Raw right now.
Yeah, but see, the
Paul Lee doesn't count. He's tall, but he's not a killer. He's a pussy.
What I'll disagree with you on, though, is that the money is not... And can Jerry Lawler beat Alex Riley?
No, you want to see
the
him
money
hit Cole.
Is yes, okay, great. He's going to have Alex Riley. Alex Riley is no threat. That's
but
fucking
the hero
awesome.
Needs to overcome.
Nah.
The hero needs to have some sort of obstacle to overcome. Storylines, unless there is that sense of tension, they do not work.
All
and
you
if
need
it's Alex Riley, the sense of tension is thrown out the window. Not because Riley isn't a good athlete, not because I don't like him, but because he's been booked in such a way that you can't lead into that and really have that, I think, be quite reaching its potential. You can still do it, but it won't reach its potential. Right. Sheamus was the guy that they could have had it reach its potential.
Yeah, no, Sheamus is definitely a good option. They've never really had
too
much.
Late now.
What
after
is
this
it?
Mark Henry thing? I don't know.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, it's worse. I don't know that you can't still do it. I agree though with you that Sheamus is a better option than Alex Riley. So you know, and quite frankly, if you're gonna go that route and we go the route that I was talking about with Cole, then you have Cole manage Sheamus to go after Daniel Bryan, and there's your deal right there. But that makes a little bit too much sense. What do you do with John Morrison? At this point, John Morrison is a guy that
Money in the Bank would have been ideal, right?
That's exactly. He's one of those guys that he's on the cusp. I mean, he had those amazing Royal Rumble spots. He had those amazing Elimination Chamber spots, and he's a guy that he's definitely not a mid-carder. But of course, he's not a main eventer, and I don't know that the only thing that they don't have with with John Morrison is they don't have someone to mirror him on the other side. I mean, the closest thing you have is this deal with Sheamus. But I mean, when I think of guys that were coming up, you know, you talk about you know like Rock and Hunter and guys like that were coming up together. You know, and all you know
when they both were in the WWE, Jericho and Benoit.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. I'd say Jericho, Benoit. I'd even say Eddie and Benoit.
Yeah, I'd even say Shawn and Bret. Right.
Yeah, exactly. That they came up together, and they were both sort of at the same level, and one was a heel, and one was a face for the most part, and they came up, and they were able to sort of touch base and feud with each other. But I don't see anybody mirroring John Morrison outside maybe The Miz, but outside of that one January match that they had the Open Raw, they've never really touched on that too much. Well, I guess they had a bragging race.
Miz has surpassed Morrison at this point.
Well, he has.
I do, you know, and obviously, I think Morrison. I mean, John Cena kind of doesn't leave a lot of room for other people on Raw. I mean, we're talking about how he should go on last. I mean, you look at him in recent events, pay-per-views, where he wasn't the champion. Even Raw's, where the championship is defended and he has a match, he still goes on last. He'll go on last on Raw. He'll go on, the main event will be in the middle of the show. Miz will defend it in the middle of the show. He'll go on last at pay-per-views, even without the title. He doesn't leave a lot of room for someone like Morrison, unfortunately, even if the crowd wants to get behind him, because nobody's ever going to believe that they're going to push him over someone like Cena. Now, the thing is he would be an ideal opponent, because I don't really know what you do with Del Rio when he's their champion. And obviously, the cross-branding has been, you know, at its height recently.
Well, that'll just be up to the draft, so the draft means nothing.
If they do a draft, exactly. If they do a draft this year, if they at all, I mean, I think it's just time to drop it. And I don't think you even say we drop it. I just think you continue doing what you're doing, and you just completely ignore it, and people will forget.
I disagree. I think you say we drop the draft because we're PG. I think you specifically say that on TV.
We have a phone call coming in. Is that Joey Lawrence? What's your opinion on the draft, Joey?
Whoa!
Thank you, Joey. Anyways, Morrison would be ideal to take on Del Rio. That's a great role for him. Morrison might be a guy who's really terrific at making somebody look, as a champion, look credible, look great, but isn't the guy that really should ever have the belt.
Oh, well, I mean, not right away. I mean, I don't know.
I'm not sure Morrison's age either, but I don't see his style and thinking.
He's got to be pretty young.
Well, maybe, but he's... Well, I mean, think about it. He was around in, what, like 2002 or something like that?
When was Tough Enough? 2002, and he would have been in his early 20s, so
yeah,
now he's in his early 30s.
His style is difficult on it. That's got to take a toll on your body.
Well, of course it does, but I mean...
Look at Jeff Hardy. I don't know that Jeff Hardy's that much older, but he feels a billion times older. I think Morrison keeps this up. In 2 years, he's going to be walking like Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, but then you look at someone like Rey Mysterio, who they told shouldn't jump off a curb, and that was, what, 15 years ago?
Yeah, no, and don't get me wrong. It's he shouldn't have been, you know, but
Booyaka.
He's not what he once was either, though he's still in moments turn it up like... you know, he's very special. I mean,
really looking forward to that with Cody Rhodes. I saw the tail end, as I was telling you earlier, about the Cody Rhodes beatdown with the American Dream, baby, if you will. was there, and I didn't see that part. I just saw the end when Cody was beating on him and threw Ray into his digital Titantron mirror there and took his mask off. But really liked what I saw, and they had the clear mask with Cody Rhodes, and I think that's really something that especially when you look at at Legacy and you look at or Priceless as they were with DiBiase and Rhodes, and Rhodes really has been the one to outshine, even though he's been on the other show, which I think is a testament. And I think that's why, I would move John Morrison over to SmackDown, because I do think you've got more of an ability to bring him up, quite frankly, than if he's on Raw. I just the bottom line of it is that, given track records, I trust Michael Hayes more than I trust Brian Gewirtz to develop a new star.
Well, absolutely. And say what you will about a comparison between DiBiase and Rhodes. Rhodes may not have had the most original character, but it was his character. DiBiase's never been given that opportunity.
I wouldn't really say that. I mean, really what you had someone out there, spraying arrogance, and the other guy got Virgil. And I mean, and so it really was a throwback time, but I think where I'm liking...
But nobody looks at Rhodes and thinks, if he's spraying arrogance, that has anything to do with his father, whereas, getting a second hand-me-down gimmick like DiBiase. Now, I'm not sure that DiBiase has the charisma or the presence to ever truthfully... as I open another beer here, excuse me, ever has an opportunity to truthfully ever create his own character. But then again, we don't know, because of the style of the writing and the style of the development of characters. We don't know if somebody ever will have an opportunity to really create their own thing.
Yeah, and Ted DiBiase's never got his own thing ever anyway. I mean, he got his dad's rip-off gimmick, and he got Cena's rip-off movie. So there you go.
Yeah,
he's never had an opportunity. But I think that Cody Rhodes, I don't know if he's going to stick with the clear mask. I do like the watch my face, and the evolution of the character is actually more what I've enjoyed. Is that he was really, quite frankly, he was Rick Martel. He came out and he was dashing Cody Rhodes, and then it got to be don't touch my face, wash my face, and then Rey Mysterio got his face with the knee brace, and he went into hiding, and they did quite the the interviews with him in the shadows, and then he came out and he's got the mask. I mean, it really has there's a reason for Cody Rhodes, rightly or wrongly, to be upset. It goes back to what Mick Foley, has said in countless interviews, is that, as long as a heel believes what they're doing is right, even if it's not, public opinion or with the masses, as long as the heel actually believes what they're doing is right, then there's an element of some sort of realism there that can be played with, that you can say, okay, this guy's wrong, but he doesn't think so.
No,
and that's why
he's
going. And that's Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, and that's in any good. That's in any good storytelling. Generally, has that. The villain needs to have a point of view that he believes strongly in, even if it's not the point of view.
Look at the. I'll go a big all-time movie, The Dark Knight. With Harvey Dent and Two-Face there.
Yeah,
and he truly believed what he was doing, and that made it for an effective villain. And I think Cody Rhodes, while he's not, got that Two-Face deal, but he's got the mask on, I think that's very similar in that he's going to, he thinks he's right, and he's avenging an injustice that's occurred to him in his own mind. I think that came out in that beatdown. And I'm really looking forward to, obviously, I mean, it's not a main event match at WrestleMania, but it kind of brings you back to those old school manias where you'd have, Duggan and Bravo would be going at each other just because they didn't like each other, and it wasn't a belt, it was just a grudge, and that's what these guys have.
But you know what? You say it's not a main event point angle, and I suppose it is, and obviously it's not booked in that way, but the psychology behind this is much stronger than the psychology of the main event angle of, say, Cena and Miz. I mean, there's no real psychology behind it that has nearly as much storytelling, is nearly as good in that way. So that's kind of that. That's obviously very cool. And also, you look at the Rhodes thing, and we both enjoy it and like what he's doing. And it's an old school wrestling character. It's old school wrestling psychology. Everything about it. And I probably could have done without Dusty turning, who can't get enough NWO Dusty there,
The bull of the woods, if you will, baby.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, so yeah, I think we've exhausted that topic. I think, is it Your turn already? It doesn't sound like you've done anything in a while.
Well, you know what? Yeah, says the guy who has to tends to go off in a 5-minute soliloquy all by himself. But nevertheless, here we go. Let's hit another subject. I have quite a few more. Speaking of The Undertaker, so this year he does his second match against somebody in a row who's putting his career on the line.
We presume.
Right. Let's say that.
We're just going to say that.
Speculation. Let's going to say they're doing that. Let's say that becomes part of the gimmick, that the way that somebody gets to challenge him from here on in is that the next person next year also puts his career on the line. Who are the people 2, 3, 4 years from now who can put their years on the line against Taker and have it mean something?
Well, I think, my whole thing with this is, I mean, I think next year, if you're going to do it, I think, especially with Sin Cara that's coming in with Sin Cara with Mystico coming in, and Alberto Del Rio already there, is that next year it'll be Rey Mysterio's time. I don't really know of an Undertaker Rey Mysterio match. Part of me thinks that that's because he's going to be retiring, it's convenient. The other part of me has Vince sitting in an office not thinking that anybody's going to think that this little Rey Mysterio is going to end the Undertaker streak.
Well, as I said, I think it's only happened once before, and if you'll remember,
it was the Royal Rumble, wasn't it?
It might have been, but I do remember this at the time that the two of them had a confrontation, and that the Undertaker, was doing whatever he was doing, and he's the Undertaker, he's the big scary guy, and Ray said something to him along the lines of, "I'm not those other guys you faced," and if they play that up, I think it'll work because the idea is, I'm Rey Mysterio, I'm smaller, but I'm faster, I have more heart, I'm not those other guys, I'm not afraid of you. And I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
I think then it will work. And he is the next guy next year, because you do wonder about this guy's body. I worry about Rey Mysterio every time I see him out there. He can have a great finish with Edge like he did. I worry about Edge, too. And maybe Edge 2 years from now is the guy.
That is quite possible, Edge, because he's been talking about wrapping up his career. And two years from now, if Mania is in Toronto, that would make sense because they were beaten out,
for
Miami. And so if that is still on the table, and who knows if it is, but if it is, then that, to me, is the logical choice, would go Ray Edge. Now, that being said, is that I don't know.
By the way, I'm pouring you a beer because you haven't had one in a while.
I've got one right here.
Oh, okay.
We're talking,
I'm pouring me a beer because you haven't had one in a while.
You have one right there.
Yeah, but I need another.
Oh, yeah. This is great radio, by the way. I don't know that we talk about Ray and then we talk about Edge, and then afterwards I go Ray, Edge, and then hell, I go Undertaker. Because Undertaker, I mean, we're talking about 3, 4, 5 years from now. Undertaker, I don't think, is going to be wrestling 4 or 5 years from now. And I don't think he should be. I mean, he's barely wrestling now, quite frankly. I mean, he's just come back from an injury. He's going to do Mania. And then, is he going to be taking time off right after Mania and time to peak him for Hell in the Cell? Because that seems to be his gimmick. And then he can take the time off again until Mania. I mean, 3, 4, I'm not saying it's wrong, but 3, 4 times a year for Undertaker appearances is really all that we're going to be able to do right now. And that leads to the next question then, is do you break the streak at Mania?
Well, I do think you could keep Undertaker going for 3, 4, 7 more years. If he's doing one match a year.
3, 4, 7.
Well, point being, okay, I don't know how to count. This is not my first beer of the evening, but nevertheless.
Is that like 2, 21, 11?
Something like that, okay. Yeah. But the point being that you could have one Undertaker match a year at Mania for the streak for many more years, keep it going. But I don't know if you want to. As far as the streak, I do have my opinion on it, but I'd like to hear yours first.
The streak, I mean, to me,
I think we know he won't lose it. The question is, should he lose it?
I don't think he should. And the reason that I don't think he should really has nothing against... let's preface this now with saying that 3 years from now, the landscape of professional wrestling, of sports entertainment, could be completely different. You know, we could be looking at, I mean...
We might not be PG anymore.
Well, I mean, it's not PG, but I mean, when you look at... Well, let's look at 1996, at SummerSlam, when Vader was fighting Shawn Michaels,
yeah.
And you had your TL Hoppers with the Snicker bar doing the old, in the pool, doing the old Caddyshack gimmick, right? And you had all that. I mean, and you know, Marty Jannetty, and it was a horrible card, 1995, 1996. And then you look at, I'll use 95 because I think that was worse, but you look at 95 and then you transition 2 years to SummerSlam Heart and Soul, which was really beginning to be the turnaround of the company. And that was just 2 years. So to say in 2 years from now, even though things are looking, you know, not that great, what's going to happen in 2 years? You don't know. They luck into something, something happens and away we go, right? So my point being is that with Taker in the streak, I don't see anybody right now that's worthy of having the streak broken. And that's no reflection on the individual performers. That's, again, going back to the guy that's going to be writing for them, because the top performer that's beating the Undertaker's streak is going to be on Raw, and Brian Gewirtz and the Raw writing team will not allow for any growth or any storylines. They're not good at it.
Well, this is the thing that you said, you know, you never know what it's going to be like in a couple of years. You never know what they're going to lock into. And I do really believe
anything
that
can happen.
With the
pal.
Right, well, yeah, anything can happen. Anything can happen, but my ass. The thing is, I don't think that the way that they do it now, the way they develop characters, the way they write promos, the way that they tell everybody, come in with your same haircut, wrestle the same, talk the same, that there's any chance they're going to luck into anything. I think they're a good TV product, much like, you know, Jay Leno comes out there every night and does basically the same product for 15 years, and it's a good TV product.
But you said it was a good TV product.
Well, it's not a good TV product compared to Letterman, my personal opinion, because Letterman takes more chances and more interesting, and that's my point, though.
Yeah, but if Letterman's never...
No, I had a friend who worked at an ice cream shop, and I used to say to him, what's your number one selling ice cream? And he'd say to me, vanilla. And it blows my mind. I mean, I knew somebody else who worked at a 7-Eleven. What sells the most? Coke. Well, Coke is pretty bland, but you know what it tastes like. It tastes familiar. Vanilla tastes familiar.
I bet it does.
Yeah. The people will go into...
He's also a midget.
People. I was once told when I worked for a pizza company that they looked at another company, a McDonald's, and they said, what is it McDonald's does really, really well? They consistently make a shitty burger, but they consistently make it everywhere in the world the exact same.
Well, not everywhere in the world, but okay.
Okay, but the point is that that I don't really think they're going to luck into anything. Now, as far as The Undertaker, I do think that the only way that this streak in the end means anything is if he gives it to somebody else, if he puts somebody else over. The power, it's like a belt. You don't go, you're supposed to do the honors. You're supposed to do the honors as Taker, too. A lot of people have put him over the years.
It's a time-honored tradition.
It's a time-honored tradition. The time comes when he is ready to retire. He needs to lose to somebody. So, A, that person, two reasons. Number one, that person can draw money as the guy who ended the streak, mm-hmm. and people will hate him. People will hate him for a long time. They can draw money immediately afterwards. You can have people going after him for that.
So,
you can have him at the Mania of next couple of years. You could even have Taker come back and have a rematch against him.
So he's going to put the guy over.
You put a guy over. Okay. It finally. The second thing is, if you ever want to do a second streak, that streak will only make money and matter as much as this one if this streak is broken.
Well, let's just say, though, if the Taker's going to put the guy over and it's going to be the passing of the torch and the next guy, my question, and Taker's going to do this, is my question then is how long is Kane going to wrestle after?
Obviously, Kane is not the ideal guy, but there are guys out there. There are guys out there that are young veterans at
Husky
this point.
Husky Harris.
Okay, Husky Harris. There's guys out there that are young veterans. And there is somebody else you never know. That next guy that comes up, the next time they want to build a streak at Mania, you want it to draw money, you want it to mean as much as this one. It has to be, can this guy do what Taker didn't do? And if Taker doesn't, A, put somebody over to give that person the rub to make that person a drawing card, and B, give somebody else the opportunity to have this gimmick, then it's a failure in my opinion.
Well,
so, yes, I believe Undertaker finally, when the time comes, should lose. I believe he's 18-0 right now.
Okay, so you got 19-0. I think 20-0 is quite frankly the perfect number. Because you go 20-0, and the reality...
19-1 is the perfect number.
See, I think 20-0 and out, and then you've got your easy Hall of Famer for next year. you know, for the following year, I should say. And then, you know,
Undertaker's career won't mean less if he loses. He still is probably going to go down as the number one superstar in the history of the company, no matter what, even if he loses.
Well, he's the best gimmick.
He's certainly the best gimmick.
He is certainly.
And they'll probably promote him as the number one superstar, I believe, when his career is over.
Sean is.
Yeah, Sean is
right now. Yeah. But now Rock's back, and Austin's back, and you know, a couple years from now, Flair will be back, and so he'll be great again, and
yeah,
Hogan
exactly.
will be back, and, you know, so it
and
just...
And at some point in time, whether or not he's wants to do it himself, you know, the living legend Bruno Sammartino will go into the Hall of Fame.
Let's talk Hall of Fame, then.
Okay.
Let's do that. We haven't really had this discussion, so...
Not even on the list of subjects, I don't believe.
No,
let's hit it.
No, let's just hit the Hall of Fame as we roll into it. We've got our Hall of Fame class sort of rounded out, and I'm going to source here Dave Meltzer in the Wrestling Observer in terms of what he's saying, because we know that Shawn Michaels is in. We know that that Hacksaw Jim Duggan is in, and this is where Dave comes in.
We don't know who's inducting Shawn yet, do we?
We don't. We don't know that Hunter is inducting Shawn yet, no.
I still think it might end up being Kevin Nash.
I think it might be both of them, quite frankly.
You know what? I would not be surprised.
You know.
Yeah.
And I heard somebody somewhere talking about Sean Waltman inducting Sean, which I think is just a, pardon the pun, a pipe dream, because I mean he'll be there, I'm sure, but he's not getting up there any you know, he's got about as much of a chance as Aldo Montoya does, I think, is getting up there and inducting Sean. So
agreed.
But let's talk about so those are the two that we know as we record this. Meltzer is also Dave Meltzer. I'm calling him Meltzer. I don't even know him. Is reporting Sonny as the diva, the original diva, as they'll undoubtedly tout her.
Absolutely, she should be in. As far as I'm concerned,
oh, she really should. I mean, it was something that until you know, you had your Elizabeth and you had your sensational Sherry there. And really, you didn't have another, you know, Luna Vachon had a cup of coffee, but
Elizabeth isn't in.
Elizabeth is not in, no, but which is a shame, quite frankly, but it's just, you know, the events surrounding, you know, what's happened to her later in life. But it is something that Sonny really was the one that sort of repopularized those, you know, a female valet again. And that's what brought us, you know, Sable and Marlena. And
in a lot of ways, I think that Sonny's the one where people went, oh, you know what, you can have somebody associated with wrestling who's young and good-looking. Because at that point in time, you had your Bertha phase kind of around. Medusa Miceli may have had a great body, but the face,
face.
Yeah, it's not so great.
Nice,
you know?
Legs, shame about the face.
Yeah, something like that. And I do think that she kind of, that's one of her, that's her biggest influence, was I do think all of a sudden that...
Mo's tapping out here. I don't know what's going on. He just cut out on us here, so I'm just going to keep talking for him. But no, I do think that Sonny was someone that came along, and really Sonny mirrored Shawn Michaels at the time, where Shawn Michaels was, you know, the heartthrob male for the girls, and then you had Sonny, this really hot chick for the guys,
she made it so that men would look and think that women could look and women could be associated with the company, with wrestling, but she also made, I think, so women were more comfortable coming in and being, she's part of what started that, and Sable, and, you know, the Nitro girls and such a thing, that women were all of a sudden more comfortable coming into this industry, you know, when they were former models or whatever, and thinking that it's a great
thing. I thought
way to
Brett
get
made them more comfortable.
No, Brett, I believe, Randy Orton afterwards made them uncomfortable.
That's true. There you go. That's cool. Amy Weber. But no, it's great. But no, I think that Sonny definitely deserves to be there in my mind. I think it's, I don't want to say it's long overdue, but it's actually the time is about right, I think.
Time is about right,
For Sonny, now that you have all these other
Abdullah the Butcher,
divas in there.
I think is a fantastic
Abby?
Time.
Abby? Well, Abby is good because what they'll do is they've got his House of Ribs, it's Chinese Food and Ribs place, Abby's House of Ribs, I believe.
Something
in Chinese,
like that, yeah.
Is there in Atlanta, so...
He meets their quota of having somebody of a different color, which they frankly want.
That's true. But he's also someone that, again, will get him a little bit more, a little local publicity, and you know, and someone that and he definitely absolutely deserves.
Oh, yeah. He deserves it, no question about it. That guy was in the touring days of territories was a huge draw. Now he's the type of character that obviously he was best suited to come in, make a big splash, draw a lot of money, move to the next territory, and then come back because his act would get old. But the man has wrestled forever. He was big overseas. He was big here. You know what? You can talk about them meeting their quota and whether or not they're really doing that, and I believe they are, but nevertheless, here. This is a man who deserves to be in. I respect Abdullah the Butcher.
Here is Stampede Wrestling, for those of you wondering. We're recording this out of Calgary, so he came in, and there aren't any real tapes of this, but Abdullah the Butcher really starting in Calgary and not the 350-pound scarred-up man. He was actually slim and could move and was definitely a different Abby than what most fans listening will think of Abby for, but he has been all over the world, and he wasn't ever in WWF that I know of.
Might have been a little run with in WCW senior. There. Spinning the wheel and all that.
Spin the wheel, make the deal with Cactus Jack. And, I mean, he had his feud with Carlos Colon, that youngster in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
He did a lot of Japan with, the Sheik and with Brody. And then,
well, Sheik's in. Why wouldn't Abdullah be in? I guess she ran his own territory, but Abdullah the Butcher, absolutely this guy should be in there.
And that's right.
He's a great, great guy to go in this year, so no problem. Again, that's four inductees I have no problem with. Who else you got on the list?
The Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors.
Absolutely. I mean great. Redefined what tag team wrestling could be as far as a gimmick.
That's right. And they're actually going to be inducted by Rocco.
Let's not get into Rocco. Jesus Christ. You know, because what you want to do is take somebody. You know, it proves to me when I talk about the shitty writing that they have right now and the way that they take somebody and they don't know how to take them and make money with them, that the same thing existed even before.
Not everything was rosy. Not everything was rosy back then, that's for sure. I mean, it's just a matter of they didn't have big plans, and so they brought in Rocco. But I don't know who to induct him. I would assume that possibly a combination. Again, I don't know that they'll do too many combinations.
If the Road Warriors go in, does Ellering one of them?
Well, that's the thing. Does Ellering go in, or is Ellering inducting them along with, I would say, James Laurinaitis of the St. Louis Rams? You know, Road Warriors' son, right?
Yeah,
it's Animal's son.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, and he's a big, football-playing sort of celebrity, and I think...
Yeah, that makes sense.
You do that. I mean, I think Laurinaitis is a shoo-in to induct them. It's just a matter of, is Ellering a part of them, or is Ellering there?
I think Ellering won't be a part of them.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Maybe Sunny will be a part of them. After all, she managed them in the WWE for about as long as Ellering did.
That is true.
You know what? We're getting near an hour here. There's one last subject I want to hit here.
Okay, well, do we have the rest of just to round out the Hall of Fame, we also want to do Bullet Bob.
Bullet Bob Armstrong guy who deserves
definitely
to get in there,
going
absolutely.
In. And Road Dogg, possibly. I mean, Scott Armstrong has come back as a referee, refereed the main event of SmackDown as for this last week. So he's back, and I think that'll tie in that he'll do the induction there. I'm hoping probably with the Road Dogg. I don't know.
That'd be fantastic. I hope the Road Dogg. Actually,
the
funny thing is,
the
Rock's
favorite
guy. If the
Road
Dogg came out, both at the Hall of Fame or even just came out of WrestleMania, the guy would get a monster reaction.
I don't know about monster.
Oh, I believe he would. Especially as soon as he says, you don't know.
Well, if he did that, that might be. I don't know.
Nash came out as Diesel, and that got a monster reaction.
Yeah, but Diesel, I mean, Nash came out, and the Diesel music played. And the thing was, it was in Boston. I don't know where WrestleMania's in Atlanta. I mean, it very well could get a monster reaction. I'm not convinced. Let's put it that way. I mean, I would be more convinced with Nash than Road Dogg. Not taking anything away from Road Dogg or anything. Not to say that he wouldn't get a good reaction.
I believe he'd get a bigger reaction than Billy Gunn because, Billy Gunn absolutely sucks.
That's true.
That's a rumor, true. Anyways.
That's, yeah, well, just ask right, that woman in Winnipeg.
Anybody else there on that list?
No, I'm trying to think of... I don't really have a list. I'm doing this off the top of my head. So we have Bull Bob, and I don't know of anybody else. There have been talk about Arn Anderson. There have been talk about Lex Luger. There have been talk about Ron Simmons.
The person
Simmons.
Talking about Lex Luger is being you.
Hey.
When are you finally going to admit that that's not... I'm telling you, not only is he not getting in this year, I don't know how long or if ever that man will get in. Should he get in? That's a whole other debate. Will he get in?
James Dudley's in.
It's not happening. Yeah, whatever. James Dudley.
Should he get in? James Dudley got in.
Yeah, okay. No, you're right. Everybody should. I've said this before. He probably will get in because everybody gets in because it's really a joke. But a long time before this guy's getting in. Certainly not this year.
All right. So let's hit that last topic.
These movies, the WWE's, the Chaperone just came out. Three theaters across North America packed to the rafters,
I believe. I missed it.
You missed it somehow. I don't know. But the question is, these movies, the WWE now, are they doing more harm than good? Do they make their superstars seem like bigger, larger-than-life movie stars? Or are they making them seem like they're, frankly, lesser stars than what the WWE television itself is doing?
You know, I think it does, from a company perspective, I think it does more harm than good. And it's not to say that people look at them lesser because they're in the movie, they've had 12 rounds, they've had the Marine, they've had they've had the Chaperone, they've had Knucklehead and whatever. What was the Cena one where he was had the biggest acting role of his life, where he played an actual amateur wrestler? Legendary. Yeah. So
Cena playing an amateur wrestler, Kane had that movie too. Cena playing somebody who knew how to wrestling really is acting.
Yeah, it really is. And they, so they had, what, two Marines. They had a Ken Kennedy had a movie back then. So they've had, let's say, 10.
Kane, obviously Kane had his movie, mm-hmm. Condemned with Steve Austin. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at 12
10,
rounds,
10,
you look
right?
at Legend, you look at 12 rounds, you look at a lot of these movies, the Marine and such. I think as time has gone on, especially with the release of these last two movies, the Knucklehead and the Chaperone,
yeah.
the budget and the quality that appears to be coming from the trailers that I've seen is going downhill. I think when people saw 12 Rounds or they saw the Marine, the original Marine, or when they saw even Kane and Cena Evil or Condemned.
Cena Evil, that's what it was.
I don't think that it looked like a big budget movie, but I don't think it made them look poor. I think, though, as now that it looks like they've given up on the movies prospect, on doing good movies, on doing movies of quality, both in production values as well as in quality of script.
I don't quite frankly think that they even care.
Now they're starting to look like jokes.
But all they're doing, they've released them. I mean, we talk about Knucklehead and we talk about Chaperone. I mean, they release them in three theaters or whatnot, just so they can't. And it's basically it's basically so they don't have to say straight to DVD, because quite frankly, it's not straight to DVD. It's just it's out on theaters one day and it's to DVD, 2 weeks later. Which that's just a technicality and that's just a marketing gimmick and that's just they can. No, I don't know why they're concerned all of a sudden about lying.
But is it giving them the shine? Do the wrestlers get the shine from doing these movies now, or do they look like, oh my God, that's the only movie you can be in? You guys are a joke.
Neither. I think neither. I don't think it, and that's why I said from a company perspective, I think it's a hindrance because I don't think it detracts from your performers, but I don't think it adds to your performers. So all you've really done is spent all this money to lose money, quite frankly, is the division is not making money for no gain. You're not gaining anything, and you're spinning your wheels. So I don't think that it's worth it.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you this. No matter what, even though you see some people like Kurt Angle doing movies that aren't affiliated with the WWE, I think these movies are probably even worse. I mean, I haven't seen this, but I mean, I've heard about Wrong Side of Town or whatever it is with Batista and
RVD. Yeah.
I see Kurt Angle doing a movie where he plays a serial killer with Jenna Marasco, and it's PG-13.
Oh, Jenna Marasco's in it. It's going to be great.
He's a PG-13 serial killer movie. You know what else would have been good if it was a PG-13 serial killer movie? Son of the Lambs. That would have been much better. Anyways, how stupid is that? Let's not even go into that. I think...
We're going to wrap on a stupid note here? I think
I don't know. I got another note here. If Eric Young and Scott Steiner formed a tag team, should we call them the Young and the Old?
It's possibly the young and the roided. is what we could call them. But on that note, we're just shy of an hour and 10 minutes, so
we may have time. We're not sure. Stick in. We'll see if we have time to conduct our interviews afterwards with some of the people that we had talked about. We have been in touch with Vinnie Rue, of course, Mikey fucking Rip Wreck fucking, and Mr. Bruce Hart. But I'm not sure if we'll have time to talk to them for the day. We might be the next time. But no matter what, thank you very much for listening. We're OUT, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's time to wrap up here. So thanks everyone for joining us. If we don't have those interviews, we